Chapter 10. I'm blown backwards, into the rear of the ship. Everything is rushing air, fire, and ash around me. Our pilot's dead. So is the soldier who was sitting in the co-pilot's seat. It's difficult to see what happened exactly, with the thick, black smoke filling the cabin. But it's obvious they're gone. And that we're falling. I lunge forward and hit a few buttons, enacting some emergency protocols, for what it's worth. The skimmer rotates as it drops, but I manage to get us evened out enough so that when we hit the ground, crashing into a wooded area near the falls, we're right side up. It's only once we've stopped skidding and the smoke starts to clear that I can assess the damage. Getting to my feet, I realize my left wrist is broken. A setback, but one I can overcome. I only need one hand to fire a blaster. I could kill without either arm if I needed to.
Report!
I shout, the sounds of the nearby waterfalls nearly drowning out my voice.
Sir!
Someone says. From the back of the skimmer, the newbie emerges, coughing. There's a cut on his forehead, but otherwise he looks fine.
Is it just you?
I ask. He nods. I glance at the controls. Our communication systems are shot. Somewhere near us, I can hear blasters firing. I gesture to the hole in the cockpit, and then we're climbing out.
What's your name, soldier?
I ask my only remaining squad member.
Drak Ushiba,
he says. This takes me a bit off guard. We come from the same vat, I say. He nods, his eyes searching the trees around us as we get our bearings. A good soldier.
But I think I was born quite a few brutes after you, he says.
Our skimmer crashed not far from the falls. I spot two piles of ash beside metal railings set up to keep people from tumbling into the water. The two remaining skimmers circle overhead, firing at targets I don't immediately see. A few more of our troops from one of the other skimmers are hunkered down behind large rocks, shooting from cover. Drak Ushiba, I say, taking out my blaster with my good hand. We have a mission to complete. Let's make our vat, our warship, our beloved leader, proud. He grunts in reply. We rush into the fight. I spot two targets, a blonde-haired girl hiding in the trees 100 yards away from us, and a stout, brown-haired kid trying his best not to fall off the rocks and into the water while waving his hands around. Possibly using Loric powers. Drak sees them too.
Take the girl,
I say, and he disappears into the trees.
Non-lethal shots. We'll ride back in one of the other skimmers. They'll have room for us.
I hustle to the side of the railing above the brown-haired kid and aim carefully. The humans are putting up a hell of a fight, much more than I'd expected. But this is far from over. We can still capture them. I can still achieve victory. I fire. My aim is good. I hit the boy twice in his rear, just enough to take him down without killing him. He falls, crying out, I think. The sound of the water is so loud. It's probably why I don't realize the person sneaking up on me until it's too late.
Oi!
A voice shouts. I turn. There's a human boy standing 10 yards away. His hair is an odd color, unnatural, almost white, and sticking up on the top of his head. I turn my blaster on him. He grins and shakes his finger back and forth. Something flies over his head, a streak of red, pulsing energy. The boy clenches his fingers into a fist and swings it down. Must be using telekinesis. Before I can leap out of the way, the red thing hits the ground behind me, just on the other side of the railing. Exploding, sending me flying through the air along with a shower of smoke, rock, debris. I hit the ground and roll, finally coming to a stop with my back against something hard. My head smacks against whatever it is, blurring my vision. There's a sudden pain in my chest.
Thanks!
The boy calls over his shoulder,
but all I can make out is a dark-haired figure, much too small to be a Mogadorian, disappearing into the trees. The boy turns his attention to me.
Man, I've got to work on my aim. I almost got poor Bertrand caught up in all that. Rand's bomb was supposed to actually hit you. Still, I'll bet that bloody hurts, doesn't it?
I look down. There's a length of metal rod sticking out of the right side of my chest, part of the railing I'd been standing by. One of my lungs is destroyed, certainly. I must be in shock, though, because I don't feel much of anything other than a cold tingling in my fingers. I look around. Where is Drac? Where are the other troops?
Damned humans!
I spit out.
Weaklings!
The boy smiles in a way that sets my blood on fire.
Seems to me like these human weaklings are taking out all your men. You should have brought more aliens with you.
He lets out an exaggerated sigh.
Guess I should have guessed you ugly bastards would pick up on our message. Maybe the Lorik aren't far behind.
His face lights up.
Wait, is this some kind of test or something? Because I think we're acing it, mate.
My blaster lies on the ground between us. The boy opens his palm, and the blaster flies into his hand. Over his shoulder, I see one of the other skimmers going down. There's something hazy about it, like it's been covered in some kind of cloud or swarm. It crashes into the water. I try to stand. That's when I realize the rod has gone completely through me. The back end is embedded in a tree. I twist my body in an attempt to dislodge it. That's when the pain comes. I yell. The boy holds the blaster up, aiming at my face. Based on the angle, it looks like he'll miss. But if I stay here, he'll hit me eventually. I won't let this child end me. I have only one option. Maybe I'll even survive. Maybe the wounds aren't that bad. With every ounce of strength in my body, I lunge forward. There's a sickening, wet sound as I slide off the metal. I feel a blast of heat shoot by my ear, searing the air. The kid missed. But he's not really my concern now.
Oof,
the kid says.
Looks like you're already dead.
I crawl forward on my knees. Dark liquid gushes from the hole in my chest, covering me, coating the leaves. I look down at my hands. They're turning gray. A bomb of exclamations goes off in my head.
You failed! Kill them! It hurts! Don't let this human beat you!
And then comes the loudest of all as my fingers start to break apart, disintegrating.
Hail our beloved leader. Forever may he.
Part 3. Rexicus Saturnus. Chapter 11. Standing in the center of the great glass window of our warship's bridge, I have an unobstructed view of the invasion of Earth. It's surprisingly quiet, as if the humans have already accepted their fate, choosing compliance over opposition. This is good for us. It means that when we actually come down out of our warships and take the planet, we won't be met with much resistance. And yet, despite knowing this, I can't shake an uncomfortable feeling in the back of my mind, something almost like guilt. I think I might actually feel sorry for the humans. They're fighting back in other places like New York and Beijing, of course, where my people are doing what the Great Book says is our purpose in life. In those cities, our ground troops are seeing action, flexing their trigger fingers, bathing in the blood of those who stand against them, while our pilots rain fire from above, destroying any who would oppose Mogadorian progress. Domination through combat. No one can hope to stop us. The Guard, or the humans, who've somehow gained powers in the last few days, don't stand a chance against the vastness of our armies. And neither do their allies, be they human, Lorik, or something else, eventually all of them will be nothing but dust. Forgotten. Just like the rest of us. Except Cetricus Ra, I guess. He'll rule our people forever if the Great Book is to be believed. Though, he did write that himself. So we only have his word to go off of. Fortunately for him, we grow up reading his manifesto. So we never even think to ask if it's true. Most of us. With all its talk of war and honor, the Great Book left out how much waiting can be involved in an invasion. In Toronto, where I'm stationed, though things are fairly calm, aside from a few of our patrols keeping watch over the streets below, I'm not in the thick of it. I guess I should consider myself lucky for being assigned to such a quiet location, especially after everything I went through in Dulcie and Plum Island. I was given a slight promotion after capturing the traitor Adamus. No one knew I'd actually helped him escape, obviously, because I'm still alive. When he broke out and the Plum Island facility was closed down, I had some options as to where to go next. I asked to be reassigned to a warship. Something about being on Earth had started to make me feel uncomfortable. Or maybe too comfortable. I liked it too much. I needed to clear my head and try to make sense of everything that had happened. Fortunately, as a trueborn, I'd done a lot of training on how warships are run, so after a few crash course refreshers, I ended up as a navigator. The recycled air of the warship has taken some getting used to, but all in all, it could be worse. At least I've got a good view. From the windows looking out from the front of the ship's bridge, I see mostly an expansive lake that seems to go on forever, disappearing on the horizon. It's nice. I've even rotated the warship to get a better view. Just slightly, so none of the other trueborn milling around the bridge notice. It's probably more chaotic in the city itself, where evacuations continue. We allow the people of Earth to run knowing that eventually, inevitably, they'll bow before us. The fewer casualties we cause among their population, the more humans we'll have working for us, once we take over completely. They'll gather resources for us, build shrines in our honor, and palaces for our war heroes. Or they'll die. That's the Mogadorian way. Or that's beloved leader's way. And therefore ours. I wonder where those who are running are going. Where they think they can escape to. I've crossed the country below, hitchhiking and hopping trains. I've spent time among the humans. They're a resilient species, if a bit lacking in technological advances. But they're severely outgunned. They must realize that after the destruction of New York, which, from what I understand, was, one of their most splendid cities, I almost want to help them. I shake my head, trying to get rid of such thoughts. I focus on the water, letting my fingers connect the dots of stars reflected off the lake below, trying to think of nothing at all. Eventually there's a hiss of pressurized air behind me as one of the doors to the bridge slides open. "I want status updates from every department," a voice barks, snapping me back to reality. I recognize immediately that it's Captain Jax Haar and turn, posture rigid at attention. Medals decorate both sides of his uniform. A sheen of sweat on his head causes his complicated skull tattoos to shine under the lights. Two other trueborn follow after him. Our communications officer, Denbar, and Mira, one of the few trueborn females in our military. All their faces are blank, but look somehow paler than usual. I wonder where they're coming from within the ship, and what they've been talking about. Even though I'm a trueborn officer, I still lack top-level security clearance. Plenty of meetings take place without me being present. The fact that I'm kept in the dark is the captain's decision. I understand his hesitation to include me, since I've only recently been assigned to his crew. Still, I can't shake the feeling that when Jax Haar looks at me, he knows the truth, somehow, some way, that I helped Adamus, that I killed our own people, that I betrayed beloved leader, I remind myself, for the 1,000th time, that if anyone really did think this, I'd be executed without hesitation. But the paranoia remains. Maybe because I myself have trouble understanding my past actions, and why I helped Adamus, when I could have easily left him locked up on Plum Island. Why I betrayed my people, just to help an enemy. Even if at moments during our time together, we felt like something else, like friends. Or maybe, it's just that spending so many days with Adamus awakens something in me. A series of questions I consciously try not to ask. A secret I keep locked away in the darkest part of my head that surfaces every night when I'm alone, half asleep, guard down. Because of Adamus, I have doubts about the Mogadorian cause. Officer Saturnus, the captain steps over to me. I bow slightly in acknowledgement, and then we stand facing one another at the center of the window. I'm bigger and stronger than most Mogadorian troops, even many Trueborn, but Jax Har towers over me. How long would it take us to reach beloved leader's base of operations? He asks. One moment, sir, I say, walking back to my terminal, where I tap on a keyboard and bring various figures up on the screen. We could be at the West Virginia base in approximately 2 hours. Jax Har nods, but doesn't say anything. He just stands there looking over my shoulder at nothing. A few seconds pass in silence. Shall I plot a course? I ask. His eyes snap into focus as he scowls at me. Did I give you that order? He spits. No, sir, I mutter. He turns away, shouting at Denbar, who stands in front of a large computer terminal on the other side of the bridge. Get me an open channel, broadcasting to the Anubis and the base in West Virginia. Denbar does so. When Jax Har speaks again, his voice booms, filling the room. This is Captain Jax Har of Warship Delta, currently stationed above the Canadian city of Toronto. He pauses momentarily, brow furrowing for a few seconds before continuing. We are awaiting orders and requesting guidance from beloved leader, so that we may forge ahead and ensure Mogadorian progress. Please advise. Something about this is odd. I listen to his words and try to piece together why he seems so flustered, almost nervous. He's been doing stuff like this all day, sometimes asking about the whereabouts of a supposed Lorik ship, other times contacting West Virginia just to check in. Then I realize why this seems so odd. He's actually asking for commands. Either he's gotten bored waiting for action and is succumbing to some sort of bloodlust, or has something happened in the fleet that I don't know about? When was the last time we did get an order from Cetricus Ra? What is beloved leader doing now? The captain motions to Denbar, who cuts off the line. Alert me immediately if we receive a response, Jax Har says. He takes a few steps towards his captain's chair before stopping, looking at me over his shoulder. And Officer Saturnus, if I find you away from your terminal during one of your shifts again, I'll have your feet nailed to the floor in front of it. We're not here on a sightseeing mission. Sir, I say again. Captain, Denbar rushes to him, holding out an electronic pad. We've received a message from our people in the American capital. Level 1 clearance. In a few long steps, Jax Har crosses the bridge, swiping the tablet from his subordinate's hand. His face flashes with concern for only a moment. Come with me, he says, motioning to the officer. Mira, who's been busying herself reading ship diagnostics, steps forward. Captain, shall I? She starts. Stay here, Jax Har says. Make sure the rest of the crew is in order. Denbar winks at her. Jax Har glances at me again, and then the two men are gone, out the doorway. Frustration flashes on Mira's face. There is ruthlessness and cunning behind her eyes that I've only ever seen from our most feared warriors, which is kind of terrifying since of everyone on the ship, she's perhaps the only person I'm friendly with. We both grew up in Ashwood Estates. She's several years older than me, though, so I don't have much memory of her. Now she's Jax Har's second in command. Or she's supposed to be, at least. I get the feeling that Denbar's trying to take the position away from her, which is probably why they always seem to be at each other's throats. I start over to her, hoping that whatever annoyance she's feeling will make her more willing to tell me what's got the captain so upset. Then I remember Jax Har's words and pause, standing awkwardly in the middle of the bridge for a moment, before taking a few steps back. Mira notices and stomps over to me. "Is there a problem, Saturnus?" she asks. "You know, you can call me Rexicus," I say. Actually, back home, and at the Dulcie base, most people called me Rex. I'm aware. Perhaps friendly isn't the best way to describe my relationship with Mira. It might be more accurate to say that sometimes I try to strike up conversations with her about growing up on Earth, and so far, she hasn't shoved a sword through my stomach. I try to soften her up. "Did you see the moon reflecting off the water?" I ask. "It reminds me of that park a couple miles south of Ashwood. Did you ever go there? Is this why it looked like you were about to defy the captain's order and step away from your station just now? To reminisce about an orbiting satellite as seen in a man-made pond? You're not a child, Saturnus." She knows about the pond. "So you have been to the park." Mira turns her back to me and starts to walk away. "Wait," I say, a little too loudly. I glance around, but the handful of other Trueborn officers around are minding their own business, or at least pretending to. She faces me again, the brow over one dark eye raised in annoyance. "Are things okay?" I ask as quietly as I can. "Normal? With the ship and everything that's going on. With the invasion. Things just seem tense. What do you mean?" Her face may as well be made of stone. She betrays no hint of emotion. "Everything is going exactly as beloved leader expected it would. His word is prophecy and truth." This is one of the problems with Mogadorians. Or at least with those who have no doubts about Cetricus Ra's plans. So, like, 99.99% of my people. "Well, it's just that I've never seen a captain ask for orders before. We wait until we're told what to do. That's our job. And I've been on the bridge for most of the last 12 hours. We haven't received any transmissions from the Anubis or West Virginia. High command is no doubt busy with more important things at this time." "When was the last time we got orders?" I ask. She opens her mouth to speak, but no words come out. Instead, she just looks at me for a few seconds, searching my face. "You'd have to ask Denbar," she says flatly. I try to reframe my question. "What would you do if you were captain?" "I wouldn't bother beloved leader like some pestering..." she says, and then stops. Her eyes narrow. I grin. I've caught her. "Officer Saturnus," she says, loud enough for everyone else on the bridge to hear. "Your shift must be over soon. If you've been on the bridge for 12 hours, I'm sure you're exhausted. Before you leave, though, I want you to run possible flight patterns to every second-tier city target in North America. Double-check your numbers. Triple-check them. We need to be prepared for when our next orders come in." She smirks and then turns away and heads back to the main controls. Great. I glance around, but no one makes eye contact with me. Most of the people on the bridge were born on Mogador, or on ships. There's a noticeable brutality to them, an economy in their speech. They say only what they have to, when spoken to. They don't pretend to care about camaraderie. And above all else, they obey without question. But I grew up on Earth. So did Mira. Even if we were in Mogadorian homes, they were designed to look like human communities. We sneaked human entertainment and learned how the species functioned so that we could better understand them, could conquer them more easily, Some of that must have rubbed off on us. I wouldn't say that it's been difficult adjusting to life on a ship, surrounded by a bunch of uptight Moogs. But it's different, especially after spending so much time on Earth. Sometimes I miss just talking, or having someone to talk to. Underneath that hard exterior, maybe Mira feels the same way. One thing's for certain. It's obvious something's got our captain spooked. Still, I have to be careful. Questions are a dangerous thing up here. Ask the wrong one, and you're dead. Or you're labeled a traitor. I start looking at the routes Mira mentioned. There are so many cities left. A whole world out there to conquer. And yet I can't shake the idea that despite what the Great Book says, that progress can only be made through war, death, and bloodshed. There might be another way. After living so much of my life among the humans, I can't help but hope that it doesn't become another Lorien, or another Mogador, a place I've never even been. I wish my people were maybe a little more like the humans. A culture that has war, yes, but also respects peace and tranquility. Bloodshed is ever-present, but not the entire focus of their lives for the most part. There's room for the innocent and pacifistic to survive. Hell, in that sense, I wouldn't mind us being more like the Lorik. I steal one last glance at the quiet, still water outside. I wonder what Adamus is doing now. Is he even alive? Chapter 12. After compiling all the data Mira asked for, I completely crash in my room. It's late morning when an alarm sounds. I wake up in a fog, disoriented, trying to figure out why the speakers in the ceiling are blaring an alarm when someone comes on the intercom telling me to report to the council room. I move as quickly as I can, wondering what's happened. If we're finally going to stop pretending that we're here for anything but total domination. My blood pumps faster and I can't help but bare my teeth. Mogadorian programming. One whiff of battle and I'm firing on all cylinders. But there's another side to the feeling. A worry I can't place. Or rather, that I can place, but don't want to think about. If we're moving into full-blown war, how many innocent lives will we take? How many of those places I'd passed through and people I'd met on my way from Dulcie to Plum Island will be annihilated? I splash some cold water on my face and try to shake the doubt away. Since I'm a trueborn, I have my own sleeping quarters and bathroom, though it's nothing special. I can touch almost every wall when I stand in the middle of the floor. It's still better than the group barracks the Vatborn are stuck with. At least here I get a little privacy, some time alone with my thoughts. It's a blessing and a curse. I throw on my uniform and hustle down the hallway. The footfalls of my boots echoing off the metal floor. When I get to the council room, most of the other officers are already there, sitting around the big oval table. I take a seat beside Mira. "Good morning," I murmur. She doesn't look up from the readouts on the tablet in her lap, but nods and makes a "hmm" noise. It's not exactly a good morning to you, but it could almost be mistaken for a greeting. I'll take it. I tap on the table in front of me, and the glossy black surface folds open, revealing a small computer terminal. I log in, bringing up our current position and the ship's diagnostics. We've barely shifted an inch since I went to sleep last night. I guess you don't become the most feared species in the universe without some damned fine engineering. Eventually, almost a dozen officers take seats at the table. When Captain Jax Haar enters, we all stand. He waves a hand and in unison we sit, a well-oiled machine. He stops at one end of the room, staring at the shiny tabletop, maybe at his own reflection in it. The space around his eyes is always dark, but it looks like he hasn't slept all night. Something is definitely going on. Finally, Jax Haar begins to talk.
Earlier this morning, a group of humans who we believe to be among those with newly developed Lorik powers posted a video on the internet. It showed these Earth scum arriving at a landmark known as Niagara Falls. just on the other side of the body of Lake Ontario, which we're currently stationed above. The video also shows a blue stone that we believe to be laurelite, a mineral with astounding properties. A mineral that's very valuable to beloved leader. Somehow, the Lorik are using this to transport their new troops across the planet.
Beside him, Denbar nods. He's obviously in the loop on this.
Digital scouts on the warship stationed over Chicago were the first to pick up on this video.
Jaxar pauses long enough to glare at the officer in charge of our own research and reconnaissance efforts.
In response, they sent 3 skimmers to investigate.
There's grumbling around the table about how it should have been our troops who picked up these targets. Since the first reports of so-called human guard, beloved leader has made it known that capturing the anomalies are a high priority. I'm pretty sure I can hear Mira grinding her teeth beside me. I bet she would have loved to have captured those targets herself. The captain continues.
The skimmers reported in shortly before reaching Niagara Falls and haven't been heard from since. Due to the Chicago captain's insistence that the site was their find, we only learned of their operation within the last hour. I sent our own forces to investigate. They found the wreckage from our ships, but no one alive, Mogadorian or human. There was evidence that the troops sent from Chicago were killed.
From what I understand, these powered humans are largely untrained and not so much threats as nuisances and subjects to be studied. Several specimens have been picked up across the planet with little to no resistance. It seems they're just as confused by what's happened to them as we are. So who took down these skimmers? The real guard? Their allies? Human resistance forces?
There have been other recent setbacks.
Jaxar starts to walk around the table, letting his heavy boots thud against the floor.
What I'm about to discuss is top clearance information that doesn't leave this room. As true-born Mogadorians of honor, I'm trusting your silence. Know that betraying this trust will be considered treason, and if I so much as suspect you of breathing a word of this to anyone else, or even to each other, I'll put my own blade through your heart. Understood?
He looks around the table. We all nod. Even without the warning, I doubt anyone would mention anything from one of these meetings to anyone else. The captain sighs.
I'm aware that some of you heard radio chatter about our troops in Mexico calling in reinforcements and losing a Lorik ship. You saw the Lorik scum soil our beloved leader's appearance in New York, something they paid dearly for. And we've recently been informed that one of our enclaves outside of Washington, D.C. has been taken from us.
Mira goes rigid at this, inhaling a sharp breath. I have to admit, the wind is taken out of me for a moment as well. He has to mean Ashwood. My father was the only family I ever had, and he died years ago, before the first attack on the estates. But Mira? I don't know who she still has there. Based on her reaction, I'm guessing she had no idea this happened.
Our beloved leader is no doubt setting all of his energies to ensuring Mogadorian progress. As such, we wait in the sky for his directives. However, just across the water from us is a possible laurelite stone, something of untold strategic value to our enemies.
He stops at the end of the table, opposite to where he started, standing at attention himself.
I've made a decision as captain of this warship to leave our post. We will take this enemy resource for ourselves and slay any bastard who dares approach it. If the Lorik are using it as a transportation hub, our cannons will vaporize anyone who appears. I've no doubt in my mind that when beloved leader hears of our initiative and boldness, he will reward our quick thinking.
The captain is silent then, letting his eyes drift among his subordinates. He doesn't ask if we agree with him. Even if we didn't, there's no room on the ship for any sort of vote. This is not what the humans would call a democracy. We swear our allegiance to the highest-ranked Mogadorian and follow his or her orders without question. Still, I know what everyone else must be wondering. Is Jax Har going against the wishes of our beloved leader? What does that mean for us? If beloved leader doesn't agree with what he's doing, does that make all of us traitors? And if he's making this call on his own, what are the rest of the captains throughout the planet doing? And where in the hell is Cetricus Ra? It takes a few moments to work through all of these questions in my head, to understand the real breadth of what Jax Har is suggesting.
Officer Saturnus, he says, pointing at me.
I'm jolted back into focus.
Sir, I say.
Set a course for Niagara Falls. I've sent word of my intentions to the command base in West Virginia. If I don't hear back from them in an hour, I'll take their silence as approval.
He turns to Denbar.
Prepare to patch me into an open channel. The other captains will be wondering what we're doing, and I don't want to give them reason to believe we've been hijacked or something.
We'll crush the Lorik and anyone who aids them,
Denbar says, slamming his fist on the table. The others around me at the table join in, until the room is full of thunder.
Strength is sacred, Jax Har says, quoting the great book. Now, get to work.
Chapter 13. It's a straight shot across the water to Niagara Falls. There's nothing for us to avoid, no military bases to steer clear of, or other warships in the way. We just have to move. A child could probably plot a course there. And so once I'm finished, I stand around my terminal pretending to look busy. The captain isn't on the bridge. I wonder how the other Mogadorian leaders have reacted to the fact that we're leaving our post. Jax Har is acting on his own, against a direct order from beloved leader. For the first time since I was folded back into the Mogadorian army, I feel like others around me might be questioning the chain of command, even if it's in a small way. It's at once thrilling and terrifying. And of course, the bridge is silent. What could the other officers be thinking? So many frustrating questions float through my mind that I don't notice Mira until she's standing beside me.
Follow me,
she says, and is walking away before I have a chance to ask what this is about. I follow, though. I have to. Not just because she's a senior officer, but because maybe I'll actually get some answers if I talk to her. As we approach the door to the bridge, Denbar enters. He looks surprised to see us.
Where are you two going?
He asks. Mira ignores him, walking forward. Denbar keeps talking.
The captain specifically requested that Officer Saturnus plot.
You've completed your assignment, correct? Mira asks me, turning around, putting Denbar between us. I nod. That's right. She tilts her head back and looks down at Denbar over the tip of her nose.
Scans detected an anomaly in our geomapping systems earlier this morning. It's probably nothing, but I'm having Officer Saturnus double-check the hardware to ensure everything is in working order before our mission. If you have a problem with that, I suggest you take it up with the captain. Or I can leave Saturnus here, and if something goes wrong later, you can explain to the captain why our systems failed yourself.
Even I can't tell if this is true or not. I start trying to recall everything I know about geomapping just in case. Denbar looks taken aback for a few seconds, but that quickly morphs into something else. His eyes narrow, and a glint of teeth show through his lips. He glances at a nearby monitor.
We'll be heading out soon.
I'm aware,
she says, turning on her heel and leaving. Denbar's glare then falls on me. I shrug and he walks off in a huff. I meet Mira in the hallway.
That egotistical little crawl,
she mutters under her breath as she continues walking, not looking at me.
Still can't handle that High Command appointed me as his superior.
She moves so fast that I have to double my normal pace to keep up. Eventually, she takes a sharp right, heading into an elevator that leads down to the belly of the ship, where many of our vital systems are housed. As a top-ranking officer on the warship, she's one of the few people with access to such a place. As soon as the doors close, she turns to me.
Your questions yesterday, she says. Where did they come from?
What do you mean? I ask. Her lips purse a bit.
You don't seem to trust the way things are going right now.
You were wondering why the captain was asking for orders.
Questioning his judgment, perhaps.
This is quite an accusation, but she doesn't seem angry, which makes me think this might be her attempt at a joke. It just seemed odd.
Agreed, Mira says.
She starts to say something a few times before she actually speaks again.
I'm talking to you in confidence, Rexicus, because I think some big things are about to happen. And if that's true, I'll need someone like you to...
She searches for the right words. Be a friend, I offer. She called me Rexicus.
To navigate the ship, she clarifies.
We'll work our way to Rex. The elevator stops, the door opening to a pristine, empty hallway leading to the system's core. But Mira doesn't get out. Instead, she leans on the entryway, blocking the door from closing. There's something different in her eyes. Excitement, confusion, and just a hint of fear.
Things haven't been going well lately, she says.
You heard what the captain said.
Ashwood.
She sighs a little, nodding.
My family stuck around after the first attack by the traitor Adamus. I'm not sure how long they stayed. I'm not sure.
She trails off, and I'm stuck thinking how strange it is to hear Adamus's name coming out of her mouth. Sometimes I forget that others don't know him like I do, or like I did, even though I'm not sure how I'm supposed to think of him. It's a reminder that though Mira is opening up to me for the first time, this isn't the same as Adamus and me talking as we hop trains. This is business. In fact, she and Adamus would probably try to kill each other if they were ever in the same room.
There have been more defeats and setbacks,
she continues, shaking off any thoughts of her family.
And rumors. It's said that beloved leader himself was at the attack in Mexico. The one where reinforcements had to be called in.
My mouth drops open. If beloved leader was on the battlefield, the Lorik or humans or whoever fought against him shouldn't have stood a chance. At least not according to the great book. He is the personification of invincibility. Anytime he's retreated from battle or appeared to be overpowered, like at the United Nations, it's only been a feint. A fake-out to draw our enemies into the open. Or that's supposed to be the case. That's what we're told. The spark of doubt in the back of my mind flames up again. So what does that mean? I ask, choosing my words carefully. I'm not sure where she's going with this.
It means that since that attack, we haven't received any direct orders from beloved leader. Everyone's supposed to be holding their ground. But our enemies are moving. These human guard are popping up all over the place. Their forces are growing.
So you are on board with the captain's plan?
Officer,
she says, then shakes her head.
Rexicus. Last night we had a meeting with several other warship captains. Everyone's nervous, or angry, or both. No one said anything in the open, but people are starting to imagine the unthinkable. The captain from Moscow actually asked who would be next in line if someone needed to take beloved leader's place temporarily. It's madness. And Denbar's always there whispering in Jack's Har's ear, telling him all sorts of lies, probably.
My head swims.
Trying to make sense of everything. To make sense of why she's telling me all this. Could it be that she too is questioning the Mogadorian way?
And if so, is that why she's come to me? Because she's figured out that I'm another doubter? If things are about to shift, perhaps we could be that change.
You, I start. I check to make sure the hallway is empty before lowering my voice to the faintest whisper. You think beloved leader might be dead or something?
Her palm meets my face so quickly that I don't even realize I've been slapped for a few seconds. Then the stinging pain rises in my cheek.
What the? Don't speak such blasphemy, she says. Her eyes are big and wild now. beloved leader is immortal. You know that. He'll lead the Mogadorian progress long after you and I are gone. I thought you were a believer. Rexicus Saturnus, not a heretic. Not a traitor.
I raise my hands up in front of my chest. I may not be sure of what's going on, but I do know the last thing I want is for Mira to be pissed at me right now. No, no, I say, trying to keep my hands from shaking. I was just making sure you weren't one.
Don't you see? Mira asks. The Great Book tells us we must follow beloved leader's plans without question and without fail. If his last command was that we stay above Taranto, moving this ship anywhere else is an act of treason.
Everything clicks together suddenly. Mira isn't telling me all this because she thinks beloved leader may not be everything he claims. She's telling me this because she truly believes that by moving from Taranto, our captain is betraying the entire army.
We should be over the city, ready to fire on it at a moment's notice, she says. Ready to burn it to the ground for the glory of Mogadorian progress. Don't you see, Rexicus? This is a test. Beloved leader is trying to find those who are truly worthy of his favor, like me. Like you, too, if you follow me. Jax Har has lost sight of the path. He must be stopped. We can't allow him to doom us all. We'll show beloved leader that we're his strongest warriors. Disciples who follow him without hesitation. And then he'll reward us by letting us bathe in the blood of the humans and Lorik.
She takes a deep breath.
Are you with me?
She asks. I don't know what to say. Despite all the doubt I've had about Mogadorian progress and the way we've invaded Earth, crossed an entire solar system to hunt down a few remaining Lorik, I never expected to be in a position like this. On one hand, I see where Jax Har is coming from. Maybe beloved leader is dead, or injured, captured even. Maybe he's not fit to give commands. And if so, what does that mean for the Mogadorian fleet? And then there's Mira. Is her vision of the future really better than Jax Har's? Or any other commanders in our army? I want a third choice. Or I want to know what to do. Or I want to go back in time before I met Adamus, when I was like Mira. So unquestioningly devoted to beloved leader that I was blind to everything else. But I can't tell her any of that. I'm not sure she'd let me walk away if I said no. So I nod. What do you propose we do? I ask. You're talking about leading a mutiny against Captain Jax Har.
We don't have enough time to act before going to Niagara Falls, she says. But we must be swift. There are other officers on my side, true believers. We aren't alone.
Who? I ask. It's hard to fathom the idea that some sort of rebellion has been happening under my nose. More confusing is the very idea that other people on the ship, officers no less, are even entertaining the idea of a coup. What's becoming of my people?
I'll make my move during the officers' meeting tonight, she continues. You shouldn't have to do anything, but if things go bad, be ready to back me up and take down any who oppose us. When it's done, get us back to Taranto as quickly as you can.
She leans into me.
We're in the right here. We're doing this for beloved leader.
She actually smiles.
He's going to be so proud of us. He'll give us entire states to cull and reap.
She steps back into the elevator, letting the door finally close.
Everything will work out according to his plans, Rexicus. You'll see. Remember, strength is sacred.
It's the second time today I've heard the quote, though I can't tell if she's using it to mock Jax Har or out of complete faith in the Great Book. Probably a mixture of both. The words repeat in my head. Not in her voice, but in Adamus's. It feels like a long time ago that he said the same thing to me, when I was battered and broken, barely able to stand as we walked away from Dulce and into the desert. At the time, the sentiment had kept me going,
reminding me that the beloved leader expected my best, that it was my duty to fight and grow stronger for my people. Now as I look at Mira's manic expression, I'm wondering if the words could have another meaning. Chapter 14. We go back to the bridge in silence, but my head is whirring.
Everything check out?
Denbar asks when we walk in, though from his tone I don't think he really cares. Fine, Mira says, stealing one last knowing look at me before heading to her station beside the captain's chair. The sun is high in the sky by the time Jack's horse stomps onto the bridge. His skin is pallid and the portions of white around his black eyes are bloodshot. Knowing Mira's stance on what's happening, it's easy to see how she'd view him as a madman, a blasphemer. He looks like someone at his wit's end, even more than he did an hour ago at our meeting. He's fully aware of what he's about to do.
Is the course set?
He asks. Yes, sir, I say.
Nothing from West Virginia?
He asks Denmar.
Negative, sir.
Jack's Har is quiet for a few moments. Then he turns his tired eyes back to me.
Take us to Niagara Falls,
he says. I nod and tap on the terminal in front of me. The warship starts to move, picking up to a casual speed. There's no need to rush or show off. We're so close already. ETA 15 minutes, sir, I say. Mira stares at me. She nods a little when I notice, and then walks over to one of our science officers and disappears into the hallway with him, saying something about lore-like deposits. I turn back to my terminal and pretend to busy myself going over numbers and data I already know by heart. It's usually quiet on the bridge, but today the silence feels unnatural, heavy. I guess we all know what this means, that in some ways we are disobeying orders, even if we're probably doing what's best for the Mogadorians, or at least what makes sense. It's strange when I really think about it, that something so seemingly simple as moving a short flight away from our stationed location could be viewed as an act of betrayal or lack of faith. Mira isn't exactly an outlier when it comes to fanatical devotion to beloved leader. That's our entire mindset, how we're raised to think from birth. To even be considering the idea that beloved leader is fallible is fundamentally anti-Mogadorian. This sort of conflict doesn't exist for us, can't exist based on the way our society works. And yet here we are, flying over Lake Ontario. I glance back at the captain, who's doing his best to look composed even though his fingers thump along the sides of his chair. He has no idea what Mira has in store for him. I hardly know. I can barely wrap my head around it. But I can feel something in the air, kinetic, change. What does that mean for me? Am I really going to help Mira take down our captain? Or sit by and watch it happen? Who else does she have on her side? Would the troops listen to her? Probably, if she convinced them that Jax Har was a traitor. I could tell the captain about her now and stop her little insurrection. I don't know that Mira would be any better than Jax Har. Perhaps worse in the long run. She wants to bathe in the blood of our enemies, which happen to be billions of humans on a planet I've come to kind of like as it is. Who do I side with? Who would Adamus side with? I'm not sure where this question comes from, but I know the answer immediately. He'd get off this damn warship and find the Lorik. He'd help stop whatever we Mogadorians had in store, knowing that whatever our plans were, they'd no doubt end with blood flowing in rivers across the planet below. The planet we grew up on. The only one we really know as home. My terminal beeps. Approaching target destination, I say. We break through a cover of clouds and then suddenly it comes into view. I don't know what I was expecting. Fire, death, fighting. But all I see are the waterfalls. A river rushing over a cliff, crashing down and rejoining itself. Raging, continuing, only temporarily disrupted. As we get closer, I can also make out three downed skimmers, but the falls are so breathtaking that I have to be consciously looking for the wreckages to spot them. Mira comes back to the bridge, the science officer beside her. He looks unchanged. I catch Denbar staring daggers into Mira. It's only when the captain motions to him that he takes his eyes off of her.
"Send the fleets I assembled down to inspect the stone," Jaxar says. "See if we can get a sample, and launch the first air patrol units. Keep an eye out for any hint of movement. If the Lorik show, we won't be taken by surprise. Don't give them time to even realize we're here. Fire at will."
"Yes, sir," someone replies.
"Officer Satinus, I want you mapping the movements of the Mogadorian fleet in North America. Not just warships, but skimmers, scouting parties, anything and everything. There were objections when I announced our plans earlier."
"Of course there were. I wonder if he's afraid that other ships have come after us, or just wants to know if they'll follow our lead. Maybe both."
"Won't beloved leader be thrilled?"
Mira asks flatly. Jaxar looks at her with a blank expression on his face.
"Yes,"
he says.
"Forever may he reign."
The rest of the day passes in a blur. Our patrols don't detect anything unusual. I'm unsure whether or not the science division is able to carve off a rock sample. Jaxar is basically silent in his captain's chair. Mira keeps finding excuses to leave the bridge. I can only imagine what she's doing. Tracking our fleet's movements keeps me busy, and I'm able to bury myself in the work, trying not to think about the future. That all changes when I break for dinner. Taking my meal back to my room, I don't touch my food, though. Just sit on my thin mattress and try to make sense of everything happening. Something is going down at the officers' meeting tonight. In the end, either Jaxar or Mira will be leading our ship. Mira said I don't have to do anything, that she'll handle it. Maybe I should just let them kill each other and wait for the smoke to clear before I choose a side. No matter who's commanding, my role won't change. I'll still be standing at my terminal, watching the destruction of Earth from hundreds of feet above the cities. That's surely the end game for both of them. Complete takeover. In the long run, it doesn't matter who's in control. I'm on a warship. We were built to destroy. My thoughts go back to what Adamus would do. Completely abandon our people. It wouldn't be too hard as a trueborn officer to take a skimmer, pull out the tracking system, and head for open sky. I could maybe try to track down Adamus and see what he was doing. Though if the entire Mogadorian fleet can't find him, I'm not sure if I'd have any luck. Or I could just fly somewhere far away from the warships, could probably keep a hood on and pulled over my face enough that people would think I was just a pale, tattooed human. I could get by on my own somehow. Somewhere. But even if I do disappear, so what? We've got this world surrounded. We're primed for full invasion. Our peace with the humans is a sham. Eventually, we'll be everywhere. I'd only be buying myself a year or two before my fellow Mogadorians found me and tortured me as a traitor. I'd be constantly looking over my shoulder, wondering if they were on to me. A memory comes. The last time I saw Adamus. We'd already freed the Chimera, and just needed to get them and Adamus out of there before anyone found him. I was helping. I'd killed several Vatborn to ensure his safety. I told myself at the time that it was because I had a debt to Adamus after he'd pulled me out of the rubble at Dulce and saved my life. That this was the only reason I was helping him. But that wasn't true. I think I realized it even then. I'd already paid my debt. I'd pulled him onto a moving train, when he was almost certain to fall, and rescued him from being captured when the Moogs came for us outside Manhattan. Hell, just the act of busting him out at Plum Island, and not letting him rot in a cell, made up for him giving me water in the desert. No, I was helping him for another reason. I liked Adamus. Adam. I wanted him to survive. These feelings went against everything I knew. and they don't make any more sense to me now in the warship. But as I think about what happened on Plum Island, I know without any doubt that I made a huge mistake there. Adamus offered me the chance to go with him, and I refused. I told him war was in my blood and that my place was with the Mogadorians, my purpose to dominate and destroy. I told him that the next time I saw him, we would be enemies. Only deep inside, I wasn't sure about any of that, and now I realize I should have joined him. I lie back down on the mattress and stare at the ceiling. Tomorrow, no matter what happens, I'll still be Mogadorian. Adamus may have found a way out, a new place in the world, but I made my decision that night. Besides, I'm just one person, one Moog. It's not like I'm really going to make a difference. Not when there are so many other warships hovering over this planet. I wonder how many more Jex Hars are out there in the sky right now. How many Miras? And maybe more importantly, how many Mogadorians like me? Are they out there? In their bunks and barracks, feeling lost too? Chapter 15. Mira is the only other person in the council room when I arrive for the night's meeting. She's bent over a tablet, examining readouts like she always is, as though it were a perfectly normal night. I take a seat beside her out of habit, realizing too late that this is no doubt a terrible idea. "Good evening," I mutter. "Hello," she says. She glances at me from the corner of her eye and then does a double take. "You look troubled," she says. Her face is blank, severe stone I'm used to from her. Eyes narrowed slightly, as if she can see my every thought. "Just worrying about what beloved leader must think of our change in position," I say, which isn't technically a lie. She seems satisfied by this. "Don't worry. Everything's in order. Just sit back and witness." She pats her blaster. "For beloved leader." The door behind us opens and others start to file in. Dread fills me, settling in my stomach, cramping. My eyes dart around between the dozen officers at the table, trying to figure out who the other allies Mira mentioned to me might be, and who might push back against her. Maybe it's just because I haven't really talked to many of them or gotten to know them, but I can't imagine any of these Trueborn as mutineers. I hope for Mira's sake that I'm wrong. Then for Jax Har's sake that I'm not. And then I find myself asking beloved leader for strength and guidance without even realizing that I'm doing it until I'm murmuring verses from the great book under my breath. My fingers graze the grip of my blaster, sweat starting to prickle on my body, and I close my eyes and try to calm down. I think of the quiet, still water of Lake Ontario and the rushing falls just below us. I try to let those thoughts drown out all the mental alarms going off in my brain. Jax Har comes in with Denbar. I catch only the last bit of their conversation, but I hear enough to know that several other captains are furious with what he's done. This must weigh heavily on him. I can see it in his bent posture, in his swollen, bruise-colored features. I almost feel bad for the guy.
"Let's begin," he says.
His voice is hoarse, like he's been yelling all morning.
"Officer Saturnus, update me on the fleet's locations."
"There's been no movement among the warships, sir," I say. "Skimmer patterns appear to be normal, as far as I can tell."
"No one headed our way?"
"Negative, sir."
"What did the other captains have to say about your decision to abandon your post?" Mira hisses.
"Most respect my boldness, and agree about the strategic value of the Lorelite,"
the captain says. He doesn't seem concerned about her tone at all. Before I can even process how odd it is that he didn't snap back at her, putting her in her place, she continues.
"And the others? Those who don't agree?"
"I'd say they likely have no business commanding a ship."
He locks eyes with her, staring her down.
"I'd say they're so afraid of disobeying beloved leader that they don't see opportunity when it presents itself. They have forgotten that the teachings of the Great Book preach the honor not only of loyalty, but of boldness, and making use of all possible resources.
His upper lip peels back in a snarl for an instant.
I'd say they are a disgrace to the Mogadorian people.
Mira doesn't respond, but I can feel the heat rising off of her.
If you have something else to say, my lost little executive officer, now is the time.
Chexhar says with a hint of a smile.
Bastard!
Mira shouts as she stands and pulls out her weapon. Another officer a few seats down gets to his feet as well. That's when the first blaster goes off. The shot hits its target with perfect precision, burning a hole straight through the middle of Mira's right bicep. Her weapon clatters onto the table. Then a second shot, disarming the other standing officer. Mira's eyes go wide, incredulous. She stares at the officer across the table from her, the one who fired.
No, Balda, you,
she starts.
Serve, beloved leader,
the officer says, finishing her sentence for her.
And whomever he sees fit to put in command.
She looks around the table. Almost everyone has a weapon drawn on her. Only a few people look confused. The other officer who stood with her glances at the door. It's obvious from the look on Mira's face that several of the people pointing weapons at her were those she'd considered to be her allies in this. In her plight to prove her own loyalty, she underestimated that of her peers. She turns to me. The shock on her face changes to worry, her brow scrunching together. She doesn't say anything, but she doesn't have to. I know she's condemning me, condemning all of us. I don't even have the guts to keep watching. I look away.
He's a traitor,
she screams, pointing at our captain.
He will lead you off the path of Mogadorian progress. Do not follow him blindly.
Chexhar, for the first time in days, laughs.
Hail our beloved leader, Denbar says. Forever may he reign, Chexhar adds.
And then everyone opens fire. Mira's body falls back, toppling over her chair. Her ally goes down as well. I keep my eyes on the table in front of me, not wanting to look back and see their bodies, wishing that the Trueborn fully disintegrated like the Vatborn do, or that I was anywhere else in the galaxy. I'm a fool for not leaving with Adamus. Silence fills the room. It takes a few seconds for me to realize that everyone's looking at me. Denbar's got his blaster aimed at my face.
Whoa,
I say. I can't seem to construct a sentence. I raise my hands in front of my chest, a completely un-Mogadorian thing to do, offering up surrender.
We know she tried to recruit you, Chexhar says.
He speaks calmly, like his second command didn't just attempt a failed coup.
The others came to me one by one. You did not. And yet, you didn't so much as reach for your weapon when she stood. Tell me, Commander, where do your allegiances lie?
My pulse beats in my head. If I questioned your leadership, I wouldn't have brought us to Niagara Falls, I say slowly, enunciating each word. I trust in beloved leader's wisdom. I trust in your command. Chexhar stares me down, but eventually waves his hand to the side. The others lower their weapons. I'm safe. For now, at least. My time on this ship suddenly seems very short. I glance back against my better judgment and look at Mira's disintegrating body, and I realize I have to do something. The doubts that have been growing inside my head are too heavy for me to stay here, following orders that will no doubt end in the slaughter of an entire planet. I have to get off the ship, or I'll be murdered, or I'll go mad. I'm not sure which is worse. The doors open again, and someone runs in. Another Trueborn, a little younger than me. The officer in training who answers to Denbar and monitors communications overnight and during meetings.
Captain Jaxhar.
He takes a few steps in before he stops, looking around wide-eyed, trying to digest the situation. The bodies on the floor.
This is a closed meeting, the captain barks.
But sir, the kid looks a little scared now.
Officer Denbar told me to report in if anything of note happened on the comms. The captains are all fighting.
They've been doing that all morning.
Yes, but sir, now there's someone else on.
Firi Dunra,
who was stationed in Mexico. She has news about Beloved.
Turn on the comms,
Jaxhar says, twisting to Denbar and pointing a thick finger at him. Denbar taps on a terminal.
Firi Dunra's shouts fill the room, her voice laced with venom.
We hear only a few words.
Garde, legacies.
They're meaningless without context, and difficult to make out over the sound in the background. Someone, a human boy, I think, is screaming out in pain. His cries so primal and terrified that I have to fight the urge to cover my ears with my hands. This is what the future holds for everyone. I can't just sit back and resign myself to follow along with whatever my captains and commanders ask of me. There has to be more to the Mogadorians, to me, than war and brutality. It's not too late to change. And then something breaks me, causes my blood to stop pumping. Someone else starts to speak on the comm line. I don't even process the words at first. All I can do is focus on the sound of Adamus Sutek's unmistakable voice and what it means. Adam is alive. And I can't believe what he's saying.
This is Merritt Hicks. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of I Am Number 4, The Lost Files, Zero Hour, Legacies Reborn, Last Defense, and Hunt for the Guard, by Pittacus Lore. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Brandon Schuster. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2015-2016 by Pittacus Lore. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.